So yeah, he told me we got to the second line, so I had to give him a minute.
Okay.
Still a bit too blocked behind, but eventually we'll catch up. Okay. So we're in the middle of the topic of Hochen B'Momen Asa Roy Runatz, where Rav and Shmuel are arguing. We know that in Isser V'Hetter, you go with Mumen Roy, does the same thing hold true in Dini Momenus? Rav says yes, Shmuel says no. Toshmach, Shoshim Naga Chasapara, Mishnah in Bavakama, an ox gored a cow, a pregnant cow, V'Nimsa Ubra B'Tzida, later on you find the baby is miscarried and is next to it. We know that the ox gored. We don't know whether the baby was miscarried before or after it. Neither based in nor the Edom know.
Find that out, by the way.
If you had people around. In fact, the Rashbam. Maybe. Okay. The Rashbam actually says that the Beis Din and the Edom don't know. They themselves, people themselves, know for sure. They're the two parties. They're the owner of the parah and the owner of the shur themselves know. Well, they have opposing arguments, but we're not talking about Shema over here. We're talking each one is arguing Bari. Each one is claiming, I know
Bari.
Bari or Bari. Any Aduri Machla Nog Sayolda. So we don't know, is it the cow gave birth, miscarried, before the goring, in which case the owner of the shur is potter for any damage to the baby. Or only after it was gored did it give birth, did it miscarry, and then of course Yechayev for the baby as well. Mishalim chatzin nezek lapara or revia levlan. Then the din is, the Mishnah says, you have to pay assuming the shur was a tam, so you pay half nezek for the para as usual, and you pay a quarter nezek for the vlad, because if you knew for sure that his ox had damaged the vlad, you'd pay chati, same idea. But since it's a suffix, mamana multiple suffix choke.
This is
according to Sumpas, yeah. So the Rashbam, who we talked about yesterday, or who the Gemara talked about yesterday, the Rashbam talked about yesterday, we're using Sumchus's opinion as the basis for Rav's opinion. Then the question is that Rav says Hochen Mamon Acharoyv, why don't we say that over here? Other Rishonim, the Ritva and others explain that given the halacha is not like Sumchus, the question is actually from the Rabbanim over there, who say that you don't pay anything at all. Why? What happened to Roy? So the question is, why don't we say that you go according to Roy of pregnant cows, the Roy Paris, Miss Abbas, the Yodas? Most pregnant cows end up giving birth to a live baby. So therefore, we should assume that it was still pregnant, that it would have given birth to a live baby if it hadn't been for the goring, and therefore the owner of the, according to Rabbi, sure, the owner of the parah ought to be chayim.
The parah?
Of the shur, I mean, yeah. Of the owner of the shur ought to be chayim for the uber, for the baby as well, yeah. Shouldn't we assume then that for sure the cow must have miscarried because of the goring? The answer is yes, fine. We can assume that it miscarried because of the goring. Fine, but within that itself, there could be two possible ways that it happened. Mishum de Masapta, also Mishum de Masapta. The reason why the Mishnah is saying over there you don't make him pay, you only make him pay half for according to the Chachamim nothing, is because we have a suffix. Granted, yes, you have a roiv that if it hadn't been for the goring, he would have given birth to
something in all the other cases.
The suffix over here is a specific thing. How did the, given fine, we're accepting that there's a roiv that most pregnant cows give birth to live young. And therefore we know that something went wrong over here. There was somehow the goring was involved in making it miscount. But did it happen in a way that makes the owner of the shur chayev for the baby or not? Namely, the ikala mema mikamotza, one possibility is that the shur approached from the front of the cow, where within her field of vision, she saw him, and she miscarried out of fright, which in that case, the owner of the shur would be potter. Even, we learned in Baba Kama, that even that a mavis of chavera, a human being who scares somebody else and causes them to injure himself, is only chayev b'din shemayim. How much more so if one animal? What? Potter b'din adam, chayev b'din shemayim, that's what I meant, yeah. He's only chayev b'din shemayim, he's potter b'din adam. How much more so, the Rashbam says, if one animal scares the other, you're not going to make the owner of the first animal chayev for the injuries to the second animal.
Why not?
because that's not considered. That's not a direct thing. It's a groma. It's not direct. No, the same way as hamavas chavere. If one person screams or frightens or whatever somebody else.
Oh yeah, go open the door.
Coming.
If somebody screams and causes somebody else to fall or hurt himself, for example, he's chayav b'dinei shemayim. Sure, the Eidishter will deal with such a person, but he's part of b'dinei adam because, after all, it is a groma. So therefore, over here, the same kind of thing also.
It's a groma, basically.
Yeah, that's what the Rashbam said. It's a groma b'nizakim. So that's one possibility. On the other hand, the other possibility is the shur may have approached from the back, where the parah didn't see him, or mingach nagcha v'hipila, and then it only miscarried once it was actually gored, once the ox actually hit it. That is having mamon on multiple sides. So now we have, yes, there's a roiv, fine. Leaving aside the question of roiv, the question of roiv is not relevant to you. As far as what direction the shur approach, that's the big thing. If it could just as well have come from the front as from the back. So that you have a pure summon. Moment on multiple sophic chokin, and therefore, according to some folks anyway, if moment on multiple sophic, you divide, and according to the chachamim, not even that, but it has nothing to do, in other words, with the whole of chokin, the moment after roiv, because there is no roiv to deal with. The roiv, sure, mitzad the roiv, there's no question the cow miscarried because of something that happened that had to do with the goring over here, but was it a direct hezek or an indirect hezek? And that's the roiv doesn't tell us. So no proof one way or the other.
Well, you could say that in most cases, still, you're not going to have a cow, you're not going to abort because it's frightened.
Why ever not? Why shouldn't you assume that? Why shouldn't you assume that?
No, I don't know.
You say it's unlikely. There's other things that, none of us are veterinarian. It's possible that they... Okay. Fine. Fine. Okay, so we haven't been able to bring a proof against Rav or Shmuel either way in this whole story yet. Fine, should we just say that it's actually Machloket B'Tanoim? Which in that case, of course, it would be the question always in that case, then why are Rav and Shmuel bothering to argue about something which the Tanoim already know? Namely like this, we learn in a Braisa, Shor Shor Roya, if you have an ox that was grazing, V'nimta Shor Horu B'Tzida, and then later on you come and find another ox dead near it, which the Rashbam points out. The point is that we're not just talking about two oxen over there. You actually have. The fact that it's grazing, there were mistama a bunch of other oxen there as well. So you have one dead ox. Alpha fishes them and nugach them more. Even if the dead ox is found gored, and one particular person's ox is a muad, that it's known, it's a known thing that it's already established three times that it gores. Zeh menushach zeh muad b'shoch, or you find the dead animal is bitten, and you know that that one particular person's shor over there has a chazaka, a muad or whatever to bite. We don't say we know for sure in that case that this particular animal, which is known to be wild, gored it or bit it.
You still say
it's a suffix, and therefore, so in other words, the Rabbanon don't seem to be going according to the Roy, which agrees with Shmuel.
They don't go with the Roy.
If you went according to the roiv, you would say now what we're going to see is we would think he's chayev because you would think roiv of animals that are going to be bitten are going to have been done by this one. We're going to see soon. The Gemara is assuming for purposes of the question that we're equating roiv and chazaka. It's not really a matter of roiv case of here. It's really more a matter of chazaka. This particular animal has a chazaka of goring or biting or what have you. For purposes of the question, we're assuming that the Chachamim, who don't follow the Chazaka in this case, wouldn't follow Roiv. Well, we'll see, and the Gemara will answer that's not so, that Roiv and Chazaka are two different things. But for purposes of the question, that's what we're assuming.
That's an important doctrine.
Yeah? So this whole sugya is a very basic sugya in the whole issue of Suffolk, of Mammon on multiple Suffolk and all that. Yeah. So the point is the Chachamim are not following Umdana. We don't say we assume that because this animal was known to gore, therefore a gored animal came from it. And by the way, the Rashbam adds, even Sumchus, who said in the previous case that you should have to pay half in the case of the parah and the zlab, he says that that's different. There, at least, you know that this particular ox gored the mother. The only question is, did it kill the baby or was the baby already born dead? Here, you don't even know if it's this particular ox that gored or bit or what have you at all. So yeah. Okay. On the other hand, Rav Acha, Gamal Oicher Bein Agmalim, if you have one camel that is Oicher among the other camels, the Rashbam says that Oicher means that it's involved in Tashmish, it's involved in relation. And the reason why it would be called Oicher, the Gemara tells us in Bechoris, most animals mate front to back, the front of the male to the back of the female, except for there's a couple of creatures that mate face to face. Human beings are one of them, and there's a couple of others. I don't remember. I think a fish and a snake, the Gemara says. I don't remember.
Fish?
I think so. Maybe not fish. I don't remember. I think it is. Because the Gemara says, I think what it is these are all the species that we find the Eibishter spoke to them. The Eibishter spoke to human beings and the Nevi'im. The Eibishter spoke to the fish to spit out urine, and the Eibishter spoke to the snake by the Chesed Adam. Anyway, and then the Gemara says, they're gomel, that a camel mates ocher keneged ocher, back to back. So therefore camel's mating is called oyser.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how the Rashbam explains. The Rabbi Gershom explains differently that oicher just means that he's malashim b'charcher, like getting angry, getting upset, getting nervous or whatever. According to the Rashbam, also the vote is, you know, a lot of times when animals are in heat like that, then they get crazy. Yeah, they get crazy. That's one of the reasons why they castrate farm animals in order to take that away. Okay.
That's not so up to code.
Yeah. So you would have to. We learned from Bava Matiyah. The only way you could do it is you'd have to buy it already, and they're already done from the goy. If you were to have the goy take it and do the operation and return it to you, it would be also you'd have to be the chacham counter yourself.
So how do they do it?
I have no idea. Anyway,
how did we solve the first mystery, which was how the Rabbanan were saying that he's not going after the rug? With the baby next to the mother?
We said, the Rashbam said the difference is the baby and the mother, you know for sure that this sure gored, you just don't know. You know it gored the mother, you don't know whether it also killed the baby.
Yeah,
in this case, you don't even know, was it this particular sure, which is muad,
wait, so fill in, I'm missing some pieces. Okay.
So therefore, in that case, Sumchus will say, yes, that moment I'm looking at the Sopak Choptin,
yeah.
And the Chachamim will still say, no, I'm looking at the Chabrela Radai.
So the goring ox is Potter.
Well, according to the, he's probably puzzled from.
And so what does that tell us about the rogue?
No, so that we said is not relevant because we said over there that we know it's true, Roiv pregnant cows give birth to live young, but here the question is, was the goring done, and was the miscarrying done, which we assume happened somehow.
If you go by the rogue, then he's higher, right?
No, we said. If you went according to the Roiv, you would say, fine, but you have to consider within the Roiv itself. Fine. It's a rove of the time. When you find a dead baby over there, it's going to mean that something happened to cause it to be dead. The question is that something which would make the owner a sure chayev? Maybe it was direct, he gored from the back, and then therefore...
Even though it's rove, we have a second suffix.
We have a second suffix within
the front
that,
or the side.
Back. Exactly. So now we're saying something else. So now we're talking about, we don't even know that this particular sure is the one that gored or bit or whatever. Okay.
So that's like the second suffix, but then it's Chazaka and Rose.
Yeah. Okay. So Rav Acha, so if you have one camel that is mating or angry or whatever among the other camels, and then you find a dead camel, you find a killed camel next to it, then we know with a very high degree of probability that this one, the one that was going crazy, is the one that killed it. And how much more so, the Rashbam says, how much more so with the Shoah Mu'ad, where he has a chazakah of doing it three times. In other words...
He has to be found next to it?
Yeah, well, next to meaning in that same general area. We're not talking yet. So, Tzvod Ruha, now, for purposes of the question, we assume the Ruba v'chazakah ki'adari ninu, that Roiv and chazakah amount to the same thing. When we say Roiv, that we have the chazaka over here that this shur has chazaka of goring or this camel has a chazaka when it's going crazy like that when it's full of testosterone that's going to kill. We assume that and roiv are considered the same thing. In which case, Lema Rav Domer Shirabacha or Shmuel Domer Katana Kama. In which case, it seems that Rav agrees with Rabacha, the same way as Rabacha says that Chazakah works to be Machayev, the owner of the camel or the owner of the shirt. So also he would say that Roy, if it wasn't a question of Chazakah, this particular animal doesn't have a chazaka of goring or any particular reason to think that this is the one that did it, but you have reason to think it's that Roy, then you would say then you would be Mechasim. And Shmuel would go like the Tanakama that says that even though you have a chazaka that this animal is going to gore or bite or whatever, you still don't say it. So yeah. Answer is no. Rab will tell you it's not the same machlokes. I could be agreeing just as well with the Tanakama. You're assuming that Roy and Chazaka are the same thing. They're not. Ad Kama Tama Tanakama Hasim Ella Belez and Basa Chazaka. The Tanakama will only say what he says over there when it comes to Chazaka. He'll say that Chazaka is not really strong enough to take Mammon away from the owner of the shur or the gomel or whatever.
What is it?
Garnished. I mean, it's a chazaka, very nice. But that's not enough. Chazaka is a.
You need aid.
You need aid, or at least you need roiv. Ava basa ruva azlanin. But when it comes to roiv, roiv is a stronger thing than chazaka. In other words, fakir. What we would say over here is here you have the roiv and the chazaka on opposite sides of the question. The roiv would tell us there are lots of other oxen in the world. Any one of them could have killed it. Versus, you have Chazaka, yes, but we have this particular one who's in the area who's known to be a gore or a biter. So Roy would tell us, this guy is not Chayev, Mustama, one of the other million oxen in the world killed him. On the other hand, Chazaka would tell us that this one has a Chazaka to do this, and therefore...
Now, Roy means that we measure each animal... Roy means we measure each animal equally as a suspect, and we count... This one's got 1 out of 5 chance he's not,
yeah.
Right? And chazaka means this guy is the suspect, so it's more of a chazaka that he's the one that did it.
Exactly. Yeah. So chazaka would still come into play.
You say chazaka is not unique. It does apply to
boring. No, of course. The chazaka comes in other ways. I mean, there's no question. If an ox is a muad, we know there's dinim about a tam and a muad. We know the story. But there we're not talking about. There we know that particular ox is good. There's other cases where chazaka is relevant. Yesterday's gemara, for example, where we talked about yesterday we were talking about roiv really, but not chazaka. Fine. I mean, chazaka comes in lots of other cases also.
What you're saying is according to which way you see it, chazaka is stronger than safek, and safek is stronger than or safek is stronger than safek.
No. Of course, the safek is. If you have a safek, the safek is we have a doubt. Now we need something. Now we need something in order to figure out what are we going to do with that safek. Do we have a chazaka on one side of the safek? Do we have a roiv on one side of the safek? What if the chazaka and roiv are on opposite sides of it? In this case, again, the chazaka would tell us that it probably was. The roi would tell us it probably wasn't, because there's many other animals out there. The chazaka, of course, there's going to be many cases in halacha where we follow chazaka. Chazaka, for example, we don't go with you in the sefer. Chazaka that anything that a person has in his possession is probably his. For example, the fact that he can't moit mechavel avadai is an example of chazaka. We assume that he has ownership of it, and if you want to prove that not, then you have to prove otherwise.
So that's an assumption.
Yeah.
So by definition, it cannot be a rov when there's a chazaka.
No, but on that,
how can there be?
Again, there's a chazaka on one side here. There's a rov on the other side. Rov animals in the world. You have many other animals in the world that could have killed this one. And then you have one particular one who has chazaka of doing this kind.
Greater likelihood of doing that.
The greater likelihood, but nevertheless,
like
he's outweighed by
if you have wolves and lions, then you have 10 wolves and one
that's what we're saying. That's what Rav is arguing. That's what Rav is arguing. That's exactly what Rav is arguing. You're assuming that because the Tanakama does not go according to Chazaka in making the guy liable, therefore he wouldn't go according to Roiv either. No, if Roiv was relevant over here, he would go according to Roiv.
When there was no Chazaka.
When, regardless whether there's Chazaka or not. Because if Roy was relevant over here, then the Tanakama would follow.
Let me ask you a question. Hypothetically, if you have both,
You have a shur that has a chazaka being a moed,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time, you have.
Right. I have two animals. And you have one. You have
out of
right.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
And two out of these five are moadim. Okay. What do you judge? So both have a chazak, that is two, right, out of the five.
But that's still two out of five. It's still
no,
not right.
Well, you want
two out of
one
five
is
like this.
If you have
three
one,
if you have
three animals,
if you have six animals in the field,
okay.
one of them is the victim, one of the other five was
okay.
the assailant.
Okay.
If let's say, for example,
I own four of them.
If you own
he owns one of them. But his has a chazaka that it's
but
a...
But that's the Roiv and chazaka.
That's Roiv.
So
who pays? Me or you?
So Rav would argue that Hochan Mamon Acha Roiv, he says that given that you go according to Roiv,
so
then therefore... So
the person who owns more of a person
would pay. Ashes would have to pay. Or maybe not. We did say before there's a difference between whether we have reason, whether before in the case of Shur Shenagas of the Parag, again, we know that one particular Shur gored, here we don't even know which particular one it is. But whatever, in any case, the case as presented to us, Chazaka is not relevant. In the case as presented to us, Chazaka is not a concern. So Rav would say, fine, the Tanakhama disagrees with using Chazaka, but he would accept Roiv. Abba Bosa Ruba Azlinen, we would go according to Roiv if it were relevant. So therefore, Rav says, I don't have to only be going according to Rav Acha, I can be agreeing with the Chaman as well. And
depending on the case.
Yeah, depending on the case, exactly. Ushmuel Amalach, and similarly Shmuel can tell you, I know the Amri Afilu Rav Acha, what I'm telling you works even according to Rav Acha, which is when Rav Acha had said about the camel, that you assume that the one that was going crazy is the one that killed this other camel. But maybe not. Rav Acha might say that you go according to chazaka, Yehu Gufei Muchsas, because that animal itself has a chazaka of that we know when it's in a condition like that, when it's in heat or whatever, then it goes crazy like that. So therefore, since you have an animal which is Muchsas to do this kind of thing, that's Oymid Betsida, it's right nearby, right near the dead animal, then we could go according to that. But Abba Bosa Ruba lawyer. But to go according to Roiv, where especially the Rashbam adds, this is called a Ruba the Lesse Kamon. This is actually the kind of Roiv over here. It's not even we have a Roiv. Sometimes you have a case of Ruba the Isse Kamon. We have the actual parties involved in front of us. We have to figure out which one is the majority. Sometimes you have Ruba the Lesse Kamon, which is what we're dealing with over here, which is more like a hypothetical, a statistical Roiv. Statistically, there are a lot more animals in the world that could have killed this one, but they're not come on, they're not in front of us, that we should be able to count and see, well, how many of them are crazy and how many are not. Therefore, Shmuel would argue, Rav Acha would not follow such a roiv, such a hypothetical, statistical roiv like that, to pass the guy.
Well, we follow
that. Rather, he would say, you don't go according to roiv. When you have a roiv of the lesser come on, when you have a statistical roiv,
That's not
in front of you. You can't use so
you what do you use?
Garnish. So then in that case, so Rav Acha would say in other words, Rav Acha would say Rav Acha does believe in Chazaka. That's why he says the Gomel Oicher, the owner of that Gomel is Chayim. But if there were no Chazaka over here, if this camel was not particularly known to be crazy like that, then yes. So then
Shmuel
is saying that you don't go according to Roiv. In all the previous cases, for example, in the original case, what do we have? Where the original case, Hamorcho Shor L'Chaber Rivinim Tanagsan, right? Where Shmuel is saying that he can say L'Shchita Mechadulah, that I told him to you for Shchita, and therefore, in other words, we don't go according to the Roiv, even though most animals are bought for plowing, not for Shchita. Ain Hochem Mamonacha Roiv. You can't make me pay on that basis on the fact that it's
not proved.
You have to prove that you bought it in the Ridya, that you bought it for plowing. Similarly, over here, in this case over here, again, we're not dealing with Roiv. We're not dealing with a case of Roiv. Roiv is not really relevant over here. Only Chazaka. That's the way the case is presented to us, it's a case of Chazaka and not Roiv. So Shmuel would say that's why you have Machlokes. If it was a case of Roiv, both of them would agree that you don't make anybody pay it. But now we finally come to why this whole thing is in our
conclusion.
Well, we haven't reached a conclusion. That's when now we're finally going to come to our Mishnah, which is the reason why this whole sugya came in the first place, because we're going to use our Mishnah as one of the proofs. Tashma, Hamulcha Peres Lachaveri, we have our mission. It says, you sell produce to somebody else, the Zoron, and planted them, but like sample, and they didn't grow. Vafibu Zerapishton, even if what he sold them was flax seed, which, as we said, usually people buy flax seed, usually people buy flax seed in order to plant. We said that he's not chayev to pay. So my afilu. Now, what do you mean when the Mishnah says afilu? What's the afilu over here? What's the even if it was zera pishta? Derubal is real that. I mean, most people buy it for planting. And then the point is, even so, we don't go according to Roy. So the Rashbam explains like this. Now, you have, when it comes to Pishtun, the Gemara itself is going to talk about it in a little bit. You have these two different Roy's involved over here. The Gemara is going to talk about two. On the one hand, you have, in terms of volume of Zera Pishtun, most of it is bought in order to plant. On the other hand, if you think of it in terms of roiv, the number of people who come to buy, they may well be buying it for food or for oil or whatever. Because you'll have a couple of customers that come and buy bulk amounts of it to go and plant, and then you'll have then you'll have 10 other people who come and buy a pound or two of it in order to make into oil or whatever. So the point is, though, the Rashbam says it's not that when we say the afilu over here, the point is not to tell us the Gemara is assuming that it can't just be the point to tell us which roiv is more important, because you have no particular reason to think that you could go according to one roiv versus the other. If you have one roiv, on the other hand, tells you it's for planting and therefore you should be chayiv, and an opposing roiv tells us that he bought it. For that he's one of the majority of people who bought it to food, and therefore you shouldn't be chayev. The fact that the Mishnah would tell us, afilu, in other words, to imply that you go according to the roiv of people, there's no chiddush in that. Therefore, we can't assume that's why the Mishnah is telling us afilu. Why must it be telling us? Even though most of the volume of Zera Pishtun is bought and sold for the purpose of planting, even so, we don't go according to the roiv, because we can say that you can follow the miut of volume of Zera Pishtun, which is bought for other purposes. So therefore, on the face of it, that works according to Shmuel. How does that work according to Rav? According to Rav, if we go according to the roiv, never mind Chazaka. No, Chazaka is not relevant over here. Roiv is relevant over here. Again, the roiv of the fact that most of the Zera Pishtun in the world is sold for planting, on the face of it, that should make him chayev. Just like the Zeroy Nagina of the next part of the Mishnah, right. where you see that whose only purpose was for planting.
Right.
And yet we see the Mishnah seems to be implying that he's not chayiv. The Mishnah is telling us he's not chayiv, and the implication is why? Because we're not worried about that really. We have to go to Kohen Shmuel. What would Rav do with that? The answer is Tanoihi. The answer is you're right. It is after all a machlokes Tanoihi. Not the machlokes we had before, the Chacham and Rav Asa. We said that's not relevant because that was Chazaka, and here we're dealing with Roy. But nevertheless, Rav is still not contradicted by our Mishnah because he has a Braisa on his side. Titania. It can't, but it's not stronger than a Mishnah, but an Amorah is entitled to say, I have a Braisa on my side. That goes to show that the Mishnah, even though we have it as a Sam Mishnah, is not the last word on the subject.
An Amorah can take a Braisa and say that it's stronger than a Mishnah.
Yeah, sometimes we go like braces.
Yeah.
For halacha.
How can you do that?
Because the fact that we have another opinion in the braisa goes to show.
That's what his teacher
taught. Well, that's true also. Right. But it means it's true. That means that his teacher taught him that way. But more to the point is that it means the Mishnah, even though we have a Stam Mishnah, it's not the last word on the subject. You have another opinion of Tanayim, so then you're entitled to pick between your opinions of Tanayim.
A Braisa is from Tanayim?
Of course, a Braisa by definition is from Tanayim.
But a Braisa should be equally strong as a Mishnah.
So it's not equally as strong, because the fact of the matter is the Mishnah is Rabbeinu Chodesh put it together with the consent of the Chachmei Ador and so forth, and so that at least represents the consensus of the Chachamim of that generation that this should be the Halacha. But nevertheless, if you find a Braisa that says differently, okay, you have a Braisa that says differently. An Amorah is entitled to follow it and not say that he's contradicted by our Mishnah. to Tanya. And so we learned in a Braise, Hamoich Peres Lachaber, somebody sells Peres to somebody else, but Zoran Velet Samhu, he planted them, they didn't grow. If they're only Gina Shein Mechal, and if they are garden seeds of the type which they themselves are not, like we learned in the Mishnah, like onion seeds or what have you, then he's responsible to pay him, because then obviously that's the only purpose he could have bought them for, so therefore he's chayev, like any case where you sell them defective merchandise. Zera Pishnan ain't chayev bachurusin. On the other hand, if he sold him flax seed, then he's not chayev bachurusin, because the fact is you could eat it. So that so far goes the point of Shmuel. That's the same as our Mishnah so far, that's the point of Shmuel. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi Omer, noisim loid mezera. On the other hand, the Chachamim say no, he does have to pay him for the seed. Because most flax in the world is sold. So far that would be like that. Omru loy, however, the Chachamim told him no. After all, habi loy chinoisa ledvar achayim. Many people buy flax seed for other purposes. Which again, so you have the Rashbam said, you might have one person who buys 10 saw for planting, and then you have 100 people who come and buy one saw each for food or medicine or what have you.
So the one row.
So the one row contradicts the other. So what it is actually, we're going to see now in the Gemara that actually it's not, when we say Omru Loi, it doesn't mean that the Omru Loi are not the original Chachamim from the Braise. They're actually a third opinion. They have three different opinions in the Braise. For purposes of our Machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, we only have to worry about two of them, as the Gemara is going to say soon, but we will see that there are actually three of them.
Who's the Omru Loi?
Oh, so some other Chachamim. So you have three groups. So you have three groups of Chachamim. You have the original ones, you have Rav Yossi, and then you have a third group. So that's that. In other words, so far what we have is that Rabbi Yossi. So far what it is Rabbi Yossi clearly is saying that you go according to Roiv flax in the world is sold, is planted. Therefore, he should be chayav to reimburse him for it. The Tanakhama evidently is saying that we're not worried about Roiv. So the Rashbam says that no. The Tanakama, so now we have the Tanakama and we have the Omru Loi. One of them evidently holds that you do go according to, again, remember we have two different roves over here. You have the Tanakama can, so okay, so sorry. What it is like this. Let me start over again. The Tanakama does not go according to roves. So fine, that works according to Shmuel. Rav Yossi does go according to Roiv, the Roiv of Pishta. The Omru Loi do go according to Roiv. The Omru Loi, we can assume, go according to Roiv. That's what we're going to see. They go according to Roiv, but they point out you have a different Roiv. You have the Roiv of people, and that should counterbalance the Roiv of the flax.
And so in the end, they go like this.
It's, as practical halacha, they go like the Chachamim, right. But the reason behind it is based on going according to the Roiv, which is still according to Ra. So therefore, so we see from this Braisa that there is at least one opinion that follows Ram. So we have to ask Man Tanoi.
Wait, there are two opinions that follow Ram.
Well, that's what we have to figure out. Man Tanoi. When we say that this argument of Rav and Shmuel is actually Machlokas Tanoim, which two Tanoim out of the three of this Braisa? Elamer Rav Yossi v'Omru Loi. Are you saying that you have Rav Yossi and you have the Omru Loi, the third opinion, and those represent the opinions of Rav and Shmuel? Can't. Tavai or Bosa Ruba Hasli. Both of them are following Roiv, just different Roivs. And therefore, they come out with the Roiv of flax seed, and there's the Roiv of people. Mar also bossed Ruba the Inshir, Mar also bossed Ruba the Zuria, where the Omru Loi are following the majority of people, and the majority of people buy it for eating. And Rav Yossi is going according to the Roiv of seeds. So both of them are going to,
which is what?
Which is most flax seed is sold for, is sold to planting, bought for planting. So both Rav Yossi.
Most people buy flax for eating. How can most flax seeds be?
Again, because the Rashbam said, you have one person who buys in bulk, he buys 10 saw of it in order to plant, and then you have a 100 people who come and buy one one saw each for food or medicine or whatever.
100 people buy more than a large merchant.
In aggregate, okay. The truth is, I don't know why. The Rashbam says 10 saw versus 100 people with one saw. I mean, then you'd have the Roy would be.
There's more people than 100 saw.
No, obviously, what we mean is the amount that one person buys is more than in aggregate than the amount 100 people buy. I don't know why the Rashbam is saying 10 saw versus one saw. Maybe it's the printer's mistake over here. Okay. But whatever it is, the point is, fine. You have one person who comes.
So you have
a No, so you come, you have one person comes and buys 200 saw in order to plant.
Yeah.
And then you have a bunch of, then you have 100 other people who come and buy one saw. If you go according to the customers, most of it is, then most of the customers, most of the customers are buying for eating.
Yeah.
Therefore, you shouldn't have to reimburse it. But most of the seed is sold, 200 out of 300 saw has been sold for planting. And therefore, the mo- the drive on the drive of the actual flax seed that was sold, let me know. That's how it is. 200 versus 100.
200. You have thousands of people who buy flax seeds.
And all together.
And a few, of them, maybe 10, 50, 100, who buy in bulk.
That's the bottom line is most flax seed is most flax seed is used in order to plant next year's crop. Some flax seed is used for eating and medicine and whatever. And, you know, and the total number of people who buy it for those purposes may be larger. But the actual, in aggregate, if you consider the entire flax seed crop for a year in a certain area, most of it is going to be sold to plant next year's crop. So therefore, so Rabbi Yossi and the Amru Loi are both following Rife, so neither of them works according to Shmuel. Ella, so no, you have to say the two opinions that we're saying are E Tanakama for Rabbi Yossi, E Tanakama for Amru Loi. Either the Tanakama is the one who Shmuel will go according to, which is the same as our Mishnah. Rav will go either according to Rabbi Yossi or the Amru Loi. Either one of them is following some kind of Rav, and therefore Rav can say, so there you have a basis, you have an opinion of Tanoim that says that you go according to Rav. So that's that. So we haven't contradicted either Rav or Shmuel. Nevertheless, as usual in Dinim Amunos, we do follow Shmuel, especially because he has he does have our Mishnah on his side. And therefore the halacha is takalakshmul. You don't go according to Rav and Dinim Amunos, with the exception that the Gemara talked about yesterday,
which are
the installation and the Salmona, which are exceptions for specific because of specific issues. Okay.
And so you go according to.
So you don't go according to Rav.
Yeah, you go according to what?
You. If you have a chazaka, then you. If you have a chazaka, that comes into play. If you don't have a chazaka and you don't have Rav,
right.
So it depends. You need a raya, or in some cases where it's impossible to have a raya at all. We talked about cases in Bava Metzia over there. Hamak was part of a Hamar Yolda, for example, where there's no way for anybody to ever know what happened because nobody was there at the time. Then we say that everybody would agree that spoken.
Right. Yeah. And you don't know your chazaka.
Yeah. Okay. So now let's get into another discussion. We're saying, so fine, we established that there are cases where the seller has to reimburse the buyer for the seeds that he bought because, again, according to our Mishnah, that would apply only to Zeroina Gina Shein and Echolin, only the seeds which themselves are not edible. According to Rab, it might also apply to flax. All right. The question is, what about, for example, a person planted these seeds that turn out to be no good? He had expenses in that also. He may have hired workers to plant them or whatever.
Right.
Does the seller have to reimburse him for those too? Mahu noisin loy, what does he have to pay him back?
If the seeds were no good.
If the seeds were no good, yeah.
To make up those.
Fine, it's a make up those. That's what we said. He has to reimburse him. But the question is, now that he's reimbursing him, does he also have to reimburse him?
Back.
Yeah, but the seeds are already planted, exactly.
So
does he have to reimburse? Does he have to reimburse him also for his expenses that he had in connection with these seeds? Ma'od noisim loy d'mei zera v'loy hetzah. All he has to pay him is the value of the seed. He does not have to pay him for his expenses. So it costs money to plow and to hire workers, etc. Well, you don't make him pay for them. The yesh oimrim af hetzah, but yesh oimrim that yes, he doesn't pay him for the hetzah as well. The Rashbam says, the logic behind it, he says, it seems that you can't say that he's doing it mitzad because it's an actual hezek. That would be a grumma. You can't make a person, you can't be mechayev a person for grumma. Rather, the Rashbam says the reason is knas. He sold defective merchandise, and therefore it caused the other guy a loss, therefore he should have to reimburse him for that also.
Because next time he's going to be able to play it off?
Maybe. But yeah. Okay. Man yesh oimrim. Who is the yesh oimrim that we're talking about over here? Amar Rav Chisda Rav Shimon Gamliel. That would be according to Rav Shimon Gamliel. He's the one who'd be saying that you have to reimburse him for the expenses also. We have to have paid Rav Shimon Gamliel. Which opinion of Rav Shimon, by the way, Tosis points out, usually, based on the famous story at the end of Herodias, usually Yesh Oimrim in Gemara usually means Rav Nasa. Same story over there where he and Rav Meir wanted to get Rav Shimon Gamliel in trouble, etc. And then, yeah. In this particular case, they had a Kabbalah, that Rav Chisda had a Kabbalah that it meant Rav Shimon Gamliel. So, the question is, hey, Rav Shimon Gamliel, which statement of Rav Shimon Gamliel is your chista deriving from this idea that he would say that you have to reimburse him the expenses? Are you going to say that it's the opinion of Reb Shimon Gamliel in our Mishnah, the Tanan, which again our Mishnah said, you sold peiros to somebody else, they planted them and they didn't grow, even if it's flax seed, then he's not responsible to reimburse him again because flax seed could be eaten. The implication being that if we were talking about garden seeds, onion seeds or whatever, that they themselves can't be eaten, then he would be chayev to reimburse him. That seems to be the implication of the Tanakhama, that only seeds that conceivably could be eaten, like flax seed, you could be positive from on the basis that you could argue that he bought them in order to eat them. Okay, Marshall takes out that line. However, Amos Sefer, look at the next line in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon Gamliel, is there only Gina Shein Nechon Chai Bachritzen? Then we say Rav Shimon Gamliel says that if it's their own Gina, which are not edible, then you Chai Bachritzen. So the question is, what's Rav Shimon Gamliel arguing? Tanakama Nami Hachikama, on the face of it, isn't the Tanakama saying effectively the same thing? Zera Pishtun Rudein Chai Bachritzen, that when it comes to flaxseed, you're not responsible, has their own Gina Shein Nechon Chai Bachritzen. But again, the implication is that if it was garden seeds, if it was vegetable seeds or whatever, you would be chayev. So what's your Shimon Gamliel adding to what the Tanakhama is saying? Ela lav hotza ikabinai. So shouldn't you have to assume, this is why we're saying maybe Rav Chisda deduced from our Mishnah then, that given Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim have to be arguing on something, and they're obviously not arguing on Zerun Gina themselves, because the Tanakhama says the same thing by implication, evidently, they must be arguing on Hoitzah, on this question of, are you chayev to reimburse him also the expenses? Marsavad Mezera, namely, that one opinion would say, that we would assume that one opinion, the Tanakhama presumably, would say you only have to reimburse him for the value of the seeds, or Marsav Ahoitzah, whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel would be saying, no, you also have to reimburse him the expenses. Problem with that is Mimai. Okay, fine, let's say you can understand the Machlokes and the Mishnah that way. But who says it's Rav Shimon Gamliel who's the one who says that you have to add the expenses? Nobody says anything about the Mishnah and the expenses. Dilma Ibcha. You could say it's the other way around. Maybe the Tanakhama says you have to pay the expenses, and Rav Shimon Gamliel is the one who says you don't. How is Rav Chisda so sure on the basis of this statement of Rav Shimon Gamliel in our Mishnah?
That's the statement.
Yeah, that's what we're going to have to figure out.
Are we talking about the Mishnah or the Brisa?
The Mishnah. The Mishnah, the Brisa didn't have Rav Shimon Gamliel.
Oh, which Mishnah?
Our Mishnah, Tzadik Beis Amar Aleph, the beginning of the parashah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, the Gemara says no. Holy kasha. Yeah. That's not such a big question. By the way, the Rashbam points out an interesting thing over here, which is relevant as far as understanding the flow of the Gemara. When the Gemara uses the term holy kasha, what it means is, if that's the only question you have, that's not a big question. We can deflect that easily. There may well be other questions, as we're going to see soon, but that particular question that you just had, that particular answer, that particular question that you had, I can easily answer, as we're going to see. But we may yet have other. I'm not closing the door. I'm not saying you have nothing to ask about at all. This particular question they asked is not a question because I can easily answer it. There may well be others. Why is it not a question? Called Tana Basra the Tafuya Milsa Kaasi, because we have a general rule. Whenever a later Tana comes to say something in the Mishnah, he's coming to add something. So if you have the Tanakhama saying that he has to reimburse him, if the Tanakhama is saying by implication that he has to pay for Zeruna Gina, and then Rav Shimon Gamliel comes and says the same thing, he must be coming to add a detail that the Tanakhama left out. The Tanakhama did not say you have to reimburse him for the expenses, and Rav Shimon Gamliel wants to say you have to be aware that you have to reimburse him the expenses also. So on that basis, Rav Chisda can be deriving from our Mishnah that Rav Shimon Gamliel would say you have to pay the expenses. And therefore he'd be right in saying that in the previous Braisa, when we said the Yesh Oimrim Achaitzah, that Yesh Oimrim could be Rav Shimon Gamliel.
It could be, or not necessarily.
But at least that's a basis for Rav Chisda to be saying, given that he had the Kabbalah, that given as Tosfos is saying he had the Kabbalah, that over here, Yesh Omrim meant Rav Shimon Gamliel, he has a basis maybe from our Mishnah by analyzing the words. Because otherwise we would say that Yesh Omrim usually means Rav Nachman. Based on that story in Hodi, it's usually Yesh Omrim means Rav Nachman. If here Rav Chisda is coming and telling us that it's Rav Shimon Gamliel, it means he must have had a Kabbalah for that. Now, how would we see that on the face of it? Maybe we can deduce it from our Mishnah. The fact that Rav Shimon Gamliel is coming to add something to the Tanakhama. Now, he didn't specify what he's adding, but we know he has to be adding something because that's the way the Mishnah works. Presumably, he's adding the matter of Hatzah. However, the problem with that is, I have a different problem. The Dilma Kulot of Shemin Gam Yogi. On the other hand, maybe you could say that the whole Mishnah actually goes according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, but Chassurim Echzer. You could say that the Mishnah is missing words. Now, why is it better to say the Mishnah is missing words? Rashbam says because, like this, the previous answer is assuming that because the previous answer is having to put something in the Mishnah that there's no hint to it even. You're saying that Rav Shimon Gamliel has to be adding something to the Tanakhama, and what must he be adding? Hatzah. It seems more straightforward to say that very often the Mishnah says something briefly, it leaves out words and leaves us to deduce them, but something where at least you can easily deduce it from the words that we do have, not something where like this you're coming in completely from left field. And
let's turn the wheel over there, that should
say you
here.
Turn the wheel.
I can still see.
Talk to them about better range. All right.
So
it's easier to say the Mishnah is missing words. In other words, that the Mishnah is covering up the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, and that we can add in the missing words to make the whole thing be one statement of his, which is a common enough thing for the Mishnah to do, rather than have to talk about Hatzah, which is something completely from left field, which we wouldn't even have known without Rav Chisda telling us anything that the Mishnah is telling us anything about Hatzah. So, v'chassurim echzer, you could say the Mishnah is missing words, v'chassurim echzer, it means to say like this. Hamoicha perech ha'chaver v'zorim le'tzachfa, akidu zera pishtan, ena chai b'achri yusun, so even if it's flaxseed, you're not chai b'achri yusun. Again, the implication is, ha zeroina gina shen nechon chai b'achri yusun, the implication being that if it was zeroina gina, you would have divrei Rav Shimon Gamliel. All of that is not, like we were thinking, the opinion of the Tanakhama against Rav Shimon Gamliel. All of that is according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, shared Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, because in fact Rav Shimon Gamliel specifically says, Zerah Pishton Hedein Chai Bakri Yusun, not only the Zerah Pishton are you potter because you could argue that the guy bought it in order to eat, but if it was garden seeds, which they themselves can't be eaten, then you would be Chai Bakri Yusun. So the whole Braisa could represent the opinion, the whole Mishnah, I mean, could represent the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, and you don't see anything in it. There's not even two opinions, let alone anything about if it's Sa or not.
Is it possible?
It is possible, yeah. You have there's a number of places where the Gemara does such a thing. That it would, again, we should assume that a Mishnah of Braisa is missing a phrase to make it all work according to one kata, rather than assume that it's two different opinions.
There's a machlekes, Chassurim Mishnah, whether it's, right, you know that machlekes, whether it's really missing the words, or we're supposed to just read into it.
Yeah, there is that, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so you can't say that Rav Chisda learned from our Mishnah what Rav Shimon Gamliel might hold about Yitzhah, because you can understand the Mishnah in a different way so that it's not even presenting a machlokes. Elohor Rav Shimon Gamliel. Fine, maybe we can say that comes from the following statement of Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, a person brings wheat to a miller to grind it for him. Veloy lost son. The miller did not soak them in water. Now, a wheat kernel, a barley kernel, or whatever, has a few different layers of shells over it. They're called in the Gemara Subin and Mursan, bran, and two different kinds of bran. I don't know if they have different names. I don't know if they really have different names in English. Whatever it is, normally what you have to do in order to get good white flour, you need to get rid of those before you grind the wheat. The way you do it, the normal way to do it, is you soak the wheat in water, and that softens these shells, and then they can easily be peeled off or cracked off or whatever it is. You don't do it with wheat for matzah, obviously. So they have to do it. My understanding is they do some kind of it amounts to a dry cleaning process in order to remove them. Anyway, in this case, the miller did not do that. He didn't do this lasita. Therefore, Rasa and Subin and Mursan. So therefore, it wound up that what you have is you have whole wheat flour or pumpernickel flour or whatever. That's not such good quality. Mephoshim talk about, by the way, Achronim talk about it. Can't mean literally loy losses on at all, because here we're talking about over here a question of whether we're talking about over here whether the Braisa is going to go on to say that he's chayev because he's a noitzer socher, because he's a shomer socher. If it was actual pshia, he'd be chayev if it was a shomer chinam. So we have to say it's talking about he did soak them, but not properly. He didn't soak them long enough or whatever it is. So it wasn't a total pshia, but it wasn't the level of care that a noisy sachar should be doing. Or another example, kemach hanachtem, you brought flour to a baker to bake bread for you, vafoi pasni pulin, and he baked it as bad quality bread that falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
Or behemel tabach, he brought an animal to a shochet to shech, the nibla, and he caused it to be nevela. He didn't do a proper shechita. In all those cases, chayev neshu kenosis sachar. In all those cases, he's chayev to pay because he's like a shema sachar.
And he was negligent.
Not negligent, he'd be chayiv even as a shema chinam. It wasn't the degree of care that a shema sachar is obligated in. It's a different kind of negligence. Yeah. Rashbam and Tosfos both talk about over here based on the Gemara and when we learned this in Bava Kamma, that we talk about actually what it means. He's not kin noisy sachar, he's not like a noisy sachar. What we mean is he is a noisy sachar if he's getting paid for it. If he's doing it for free, if he's doing it pro bono, he can't be possible. But if he's doing it for pay, then he's chayiv. Okay. Reb Shimon Gamliel Loiman, Noisin Leid Dmei Boshter, Dmei Boshes Ochav. On the other hand, Reb Shimon Gamliel says he would have to pay him for his Boshes, he'd have to pay besides the value of the flower or the animal or whatever. He'd have to pay him for his embarrassment, namely he had guests, but now he doesn't have what to feed the guests. And the Rashbam adds, Reb Shimon Gamliel would certainly say he's chayav to pay him for the expenses. Because that's actual money that he lost.
That's the food.
He could just He could just say that he's going healthy and giving whole wheat.
No.
If he can get away with that with his guests, fine.
But we want to prove,
that's not the point. Like this, he doesn't want to serve whole wheat. So yeah, if he can convince his guests that to take it, yeah, yeah. Udmei boshes orchav, and you have to also have to pay the embarrassment of the orchim. They're coming for a banquet, and now there's nothing to eat over there.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So therefore, we see that yes, Rav Shimon Gamliel would say that you have to pay for the yitzias and the boshes and all that. The halacha is not like that. The halacha
is that boshes may be your original Gamliel.
No, because if you make him pay for boshes, which is an intangible thing, and there's no actual money that got out of pocket for it, how much more so he'd be chayiv for yitzia, where there was actual money out of pocket.
Mm. No, but when there's no boshes.
Oh, when there's no boshes, fine.
He'd have to say,
yes, that's the point. But that's right. Now the halacha is not like that. It is true that before we were saying that all whole Mishnah could go like Reb Shimon Gamliel. Fine, the Rashbam says we can still accept that, but that doesn't mean the halacha is usually like Reb Shimon Gamliel in Mishnayos, except for three cases in Shas, not necessarily in Braises. So the Mishnah didn't say anything about Hitzah, so therefore fine, the halacha can be like Reb Shimon Gamliel. Or Braisa, which is talking about Hitzah and Boshes and whatever, fine, Reb Shimon Gamliel against the Chacham, and the Halacha is like the Chacham. So the miller or the baker or whatever would not be chayav for the incidentals. And the same thing, returning to the case of our mission, you sold seeds that didn't grow, you'd be chayav for the value of the seeds, but not for the yitzhak. Okay. Also, Reb Shimon Gamliel used to say another thing in this connection about inviting guests. Mina gadol hoya b'Yerushalayim. There was a great minhag in Yerushalayim. Hamoisa suda l'chaver. If somebody gave the responsibility for preparing a suda to somebody else, so he hired a caterer, the kilkala, and the caterer ruined it. Noisin led made boshes. It was made boshes orchav. He would have to pay him for his boshes and the boshes of his orchav. So Rosh Hashanah says this is how they used to do things in Yerushalayim. The caterer, yeah, he'd be chayav for the boshes of the guy who hired him as well as the boshes. What?
In Japan, he'd have to fall on his sword.
Yes.
If there was a fly or something like that.
What do you mean? We're talking about something where he didn't do the kind of care which is expected of a Shema Sofer. Remember, he's not chayav for oinsin. He's not chayav for oinsin. I mean, even with Paris, butler, and baker, you know, why did he end up pardoning the butler? Because it's an oinus, because a fly could fall in there. He executed the baker because of carelessness It's carelessness to let there be rocks in the bread. It's not carelessness to let a fly. The pare being an autocrat over there will throw the guy in jail. But then afterwards he'll think better about it. Yeah. Okay. Oid minag gadol hayu b'Yerushalayim. Another great minag there was in Yerushalayim. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, "Mafa prusa al gabei pesach." So when a person sat down to a meal, to a banquet, there would be a sheet or a towel hanging by the door. Kozman Shemapakris, as long as the sheet or as long as the towel or whatever is spread out over there, Urchen Nichnosin, then the guests can come in. this way. Yes, it was like showing the doors open. Orchin can come. Yeah, or there's an opening. Yes, basically. Nistalka halapa ein orchin nichnasin. Once the towel was taken away, then the guests know already that the food is gone or they were closing up or whatever.
Should do that.
Yeah, that actually the Prishan tour says, why dafka do they choose a napkin for that purpose? Or not a napkin, a towel, whatever. He says, because that way, a sheet, whatever. He says, because that way it was also meant as a hint to people, you can come in here and wash and eat. And here's a towel for you available to wash your hands. So,
And when they would take the towel and wash their hands, be gone, it would be no more food.
No, they wouldn't take that particular towel.
I would take the towel.
No, they'd use the towel would be there as a sign. There are other towels.
Yeah.
I know, I heard about it, yeah.
They
took
the towel away. No, they didn't take the towel away. They use the
paper
towel.
There's just like the cup hanging outside the.
Right.
You can take the fish which is hanging? No, you can take the fish. It's inside.
Okay.